Bing bong, I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast. And whoo boy, I have a banger of an episode with Phil Gibson at Mr. Sue, and that is PSEU on Twitter. We get into a bunch of stuff, and he brings a wealth of knowledge, but we get into the six outstanding stories about JP Morgan and that gold scandal of how they've been manipulating the gold markets, the CPI or CPI print of 8.5%. Inflation is all done, or is it? The methane emissions bill, giving 1.5 billion with a B to flare capture, looking good for Bitcoin mining. The government hiring 87K more IRS agents to tax not the rich, but you. And then the crypto mining service Tornado Cash is now blacklisted. So we get into a little bit of how these mixing services could go down the toilet, but there's always space for non-KYC Bitcoin anon. So go ahead and look into that. And then lastly, we wrap up with some last bit on BlackRock partnering with Coinbase to offer Bitcoin services. So we dive into Coinbase being investigated by the SEC, BlackRock partnering with Coinbase, and then now BlackRock is launching its own private trust focused on Bitcoin. So be sure to tune in and subscribe to my newsletter at greencandleinvestments.substack.com because we get into Phil going to write some great pieces and publish potentially next week on Wednesday. Be on the lookout for that, about some of the topics we discussed here in this podcast and much more. But as always, Anon, this is not financial advice. So please do not take anything said in this episode as financial advice to invest in any security or Bitcoin, because this podcast is strictly for entertainment purposes only, and both Phil and I are not financial advisors, and everything said in this podcast is not financial advice. Now let's get to the episode. Whoosh. Bing bong. I am live with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast. And I just like to thank everybody for listening and listening on Fountain Podcasting 2.0 apps. I'm going to start doing this where I'm going to read a boost or two from the past week. And so I got two. One is from the dude. This was great. Captain Sid was awesome. So I appreciated the dude. The Captain Sid episode was awesome. He rode around the country and talked a lot about his experience going to all the different Bitcoin meetups. And then at this is the future. It's the state of the state. Yeah, I'm not really quite sure what you mean by that, but I appreciate the boost. And yeah, keep supporting the show so I can keep this going. But I got a very special guest waiting down below. We got Phil Gibson at Mr. Sue. You probably know him from a bunch of Twitter spaces, maybe his song ETF and the Fed. Phil, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing awesome, Brandon. Thanks for having me. Stoked to get into some topics here, but yeah, I love what you're doing. So lead
Of
the
course,
way.
man. I really appreciate it. So why don't we take it back? Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you found Bitcoin.
All right. So I came from like the libertarian side of things. People come from finance, people come from tech, but that's where I came from, that freedom realm that I have this money, no one can really take it from me or tax it from me, whatever. I did at first for a couple of months fall down the B Cash rabbit hole. Thank God Guy Swan basically dug me out. I found his podcast and he was reading a article by Sally Mayweather, Sally the Agorist, infamous memer. Great dude. I've had him on my show, A Boy Named Sue, a couple times. But it was people like him who had to come on my show and Vin Armani. They were kind of giving me like the libertarian, but like B Cash kind of angle that, oh, the Bitcoin core developers are like the communists and they won't have a free market of money. And I'm like, that makes sense. And when I heard Guy Swan read Sal's article, I mean, Sal kind of gave me a shout out saying, oh, I was on a Boy Named Sue podcast talking about this and that. And I heard Guy say that. I'm like, oh, okay, boom, my attention is there. And he read it, then he did his guy's take, and he just eviscerates Sal's argument because he was arguing that Bcash is more saleable of the money just because it's more reportable or whatever bullshit argument that he came up with. But it was just Guy doing what Guy does, is just comes in, hits you with the Austrian economics, which I was already like warmed up to because I was a libertarian a couple years before that. Loved my Rothbard and Hayek and other libertarian podcasts. I mean, arguably Dave Smith is his fault for what I am today, I like to say. And another thing that really made me understand Bitcoin was like the thing, other than hearing Guy's show, was actually having to use it. Because I was listening to other shows and I heard this one guy say, oh, the fiat apocalypse is going to come, so you need to have your own basket of cryptos to hedge yourself. And I'm like, okay, I'll do that. And he's like, yeah, you need to get a VPN so you can use Binance because they don't accept people from the US. And I'm like, well, how do I do that? So I went to like Nord or whatever. And I was getting my debit card and credit card flagged. Like it wouldn't process because my credit union said it was a VPN was a no-no item. So after being on hold for 20 minutes with the chick at the bank, I mean, I was kind of doing the mental math in my head, like, maybe like they just won't let me buy this VPN. And sure enough, that's the case. 20 minutes later, she's like, oh yeah, you need to call your branch. I'm like, fuck that. No, this is my money. It's supposed to work for me whenever I wanted to. So I was going to buy Bitcoin anyway. To, you know, I was just going to use them. Actually, I ended up thinking to just swap, get my extra cryptos with Exodus wallet because it just makes it easier. You don't need to go to an exchange per se. So I ended up doing that, but I was like, I need to buy Bitcoin anyway to do that. So I signed up for Cash App, did the thing, got like $200 worth of Bitcoin. And just like that, I bought my VPN. I mean, the crypto options were there. There was like Ethereum or Ripple or whatever. But I saw the Bitcoin option and it was just super empowering. I mean, it was a hell of a drug. Yeah, Bitcoin is fucking money for this reason. Like, it's mine. I do it for whatever I want with it. And it's, you know, price might say differently, but if you are just like ideologically in it, it's the most safe haven store of value that the world has ever seen. 21 supply cap. You can't fuck with that. You know, the block subsidy, all these pre-programmable things and the hash rates and just the sturdiness and robustness and strength of this network is unfuckable. And that's pretty much why I'm here. I mean, I'm a constant learner. Bitcoin got me curious more so about Austrian economics than I was already. Made me question like how the internet works. And now I'm just kind of like bored with what happens to Bitcoin on a daily basis as blasphemic as that might sound, but I've been able to kind of take my affinity towards Bitcoin and kind of zoom out and really focus on more of like a geopolitical macroeconomic landscape of really how this stuff kind of really works and how the sausage is made, and getting really nerdy and in the weeds of like monetary policy as well. That's what I like to write about as a recent Twitter threads and whatnot. But yeah, that's my story right now, and I'm sticking to it and just trying to make sense of this crazy world.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. So as a little teaser too, Phil's putting together a series for me on the Green Candle newsletter. So if you subscribe, greencandleinvestments.substack.com, you'll get that. We're going to release the first one next week.
Maybe series. It's just going to be sporadic, but basically the concepts and once you like get out, I'm still like learning as I go along, and I want to make sure each one is right. So I don't want to promise like a guaranteed like time release schedule, because I just want to like serve people that read it and break down these complex concepts as simple as possible. So they kind of turn into these building blocks where, and I might even like make a mini like glossary at the beginning of each one, just so I don't need to like re-explain these terms. But yeah, trying to under promise over deliver, if that makes sense.
Hey, no, I feel that 100%. So what is your background exactly? Like, what got you into it? Are you just like all self-taught when it comes to this macroeconomic space? Because I've heard you on a lot of these Twitter spaces, and you know, you go toe-to-toe with some of the best minds in the macro space, you know, just get going at them. And I really appreciate that, right? Because like, I mean, you know, sometimes when people look at us at you know, people similar in age to us, going against some of these people who have been around or on CNBC, they kind of discredit us. But Twitter is like kind of a cool space where we can, you know, have those conversations. So yeah, like, are you more self-taught? Did you go to school for this kind of stuff? Or did you just kind of get into Bitcoin and that's kind of what drove you down the macro rabbit hole?
Yeah, Bitcoin was my school. It like in less than 2 years, we're now over 2 years, but I'll say arguably less than 2 years, because when it 2020, I got into Bitcoin at like the end of 2019, and then once the crash of 2020 happened, then that really got me laser focused, probably like a lot of people in our space, right? But really, I received a greater education than bullshit, you know, university offered me in less than 2 years. So yeah, it's all self-taught. Bitcoin is basically the main, well, I say the catalyst was libertarianism, because even when I was in high school, I was trying to make sense of the world, listening to, you know, NPR, and then also Rush Limbaugh, and then trying to like smash them together, like what makes sense? And so like podcast after podcast, I kind of ended up where I am now, and what was just like rational and what made sense, and learning how, like Saifedean says, like Austrian economics is simply just economics, and how economics kind of like runs our life, and how Bitcoiners say fix money, fix the world. It all kind of plays into each other. So I'm completely self-taught. I'm really, it's funny because growing up, I was just like into music, if you couldn't tell, you know, love rock and roll and all that stuff. So I felt the cliche, socially liberal, fiscally conservative kind of deal. And I never had like a curiosity to like learn and a passion for it until really I found Bitcoin. And I sit on the shoulders of giants. Everything that I write, it's not an original thought, but I try to synthesize it into a very more comprehensible format. And so it's ideas that come from Jeff Snyder, Brent Johnson, Dollar Milkshake Theory. Brent Johnson talks about the euro dollar, but really, and of course, the fundamentals of Austrian economics and Mises, Rothbard, recently Hoppe, and really the guy that just kind of turned my brain inside out, upside down has been Tom Luongo. And I have been a like top tier like patron of him since I think like October of last year. And he kind of presented to me that it's not as simple as George Carlin says, it's all one big club and you're not invited. There are factions within the elites of the world that are just following their incentives, because it goes back to Mises, right? Human action. People are based off incentive and they will act purposefully, but not rationally all the time. And it's not as easy as money printing to go burr. And I mean, it is, right? We live in a fiat society. They essentially can print infinite amounts of money. Now, it's interesting to learn how they do that and how there's fractional reserve banking and they leverage up that credit system and how the banks are the money transmission mechanism of how money's actually created, and the definition of like what is money, is it treasuries, is it credit, is it cash, and you know, just going down that rabbit hole. But he really, Tom, I mean, people say that they're Rothbardians or Hoppians. I think I'm the first one to say that like I'm a Luongan, and every year I'll pay my annual tuition fee to Luongo University. But he really made me stop and zoom out and think, you know, you can't separate economics from politics. Otherwise, if you do, you're being intellectually dishonest, or you're just trying to beat around the bush because you're afraid that you're going to lose subscribers. And that is one thing that really, really peeves me when I'm listening to all these macro guys on Twitter Spaces or on podcasts. And like, rightfully so, you know, maybe they're compromised in some way or another of just who they know, who's supporting them, or just the world, or maybe they're just too stuck in their ways of being in the legacy system for so long. But I mean, economics and politics kind of switch the role of like who's the tail that wags the dog and vice versa. So just understanding how there's so much more nuance in the world when it comes to geopolitics, you know, why one nation does this to the other and how that affects markets and vice versa. It's really critical to understand that. And if you just say, when did printing go burr, we're going to have hyperinflation tomorrow, or, you know, eventually Bitcoin wins, that's great. Okay. You can have that opinion. But if you're going to have that opinion, keep that opinion to yourself, because that is pretty tacit and you really shouldn't have an opinion in the public square if that's all you got. So Tom is really the one that made me sift through all the nuance of this and constantly, continually learn and be able to adjust your thesis, have that paradigm shift. Maybe the Fed is actually fighting a cabal of European oligarchs that come from old money, whether it be the Rothschilds or people in the CFR, whatever. I mean, we call that the Davos crowd. And so, you know, maybe they're actually sovereigntists within our government institutions that don't want to deficit spend the United States into oblivion for the bidding of some globalists overseas. You know, nuance is the key. And so that's, you know, I can keep standing on the soapbox if you want me to, but I would just be redundant.
Yeah, no, I agree. So I want to get into the stories here quickly, but I'm getting a lot of questions in this chat about your backdrop. So what is it? And what is the pink area you got behind you?
I don't know.
For those who are listening on audio, Phil's got it looks like the ocean.
It's an Australian lake here. Do you want me to duck it on DuckDuckGo real quick?
It's an Australian lake.
And I have this for one of my Gmail accounts. But I'm like, I don't know. My room isn't messy. Like, I try to clean it, but it's just kind of like pathetic. And I need to fix the acoustics in this room. So I thought the vibrant background could compensate for the low production quality.
No, I get it. We got a low budget operation here as well. So
it's called Pink Lake in Western Australia. It's a salt lake in the Goldfields Esperance region of Western Australia. Although historically, the water in the lake was visibly pink, as of 2017, it had not been pink for over 10 years. Salt concentration is vital to Pink Lake's pink hue, and Pink Lake may turn pink again as conditions change. Oh, I guess you're going to blame global warming on that. Whatever.
They said it's Lake Hillier, I think is how you say it. I don't know. Kelly in the chat is saying it's that. But there's a place in Greece that I know, and Cyprus, I believe. No, in the island of Crete, that has like pink sand. So it's called Elephanisi Beach for any of those world travelers out there. But anyway, let's get back on topic. So you sent me this beforehand, and you know, I kind of glanced over it at the beginning, but essentially JP Morgan, for those who don't know, essentially it came out that their gold and commodities division has essentially been manipulating the market for years. I believe the years were between 2008 to 2016. And so they've been manipulating the gold and silver markets for the benefit of the bank and its prized clients. And so, yeah, it's essentially three of their former employees. Michael Nowak is the most ambitious that led the effort for years. They were essentially alleged of trading fraud and accused of racketeering as well. So I think this is a pretty interesting story, right? Because a lot of the things that they say about Bitcoin, they as in the bears, say that it's like a very manipulated market and, you know, gold is this safe haven. Well, now we can even point to this story and show that, you know, even gold is a manipulated market. So there's really no market that's safe.
They call it the CRIMEX for a reason, not the COMEX. COMEX is just commodities exchange. But yeah, the CRIMEX, like they, as in their criminals and manipulating the price of gold, because if the price of gold isn't low and stable, then that means people will actually wake up to the fact that the dollar is shit. It is the largest shit coin in the world. Probably gold being second on that tier, you know, just to appease Bitcoin maximalists that listen to this, gold's a shit coin. I might consider buying gold though. I want to get like gold earrings on both ones to say I have shit coins in my ears, just for the lols. But yeah, when the price of gold breaks out, that demonstrates confidence has been broken in the legacy system. So, I mean, go figure why the shareholders at the Federal Reserve, which are the commercial banks and the 12 regional banks in the country, go figure they're trying to manipulate the price of gold down. So, but yeah, they're bringing that to Bitcoin as well. We have futures markets. I mean, arguably, so silver lining, if you look at the past few weeks, gold and silver, like monetary metals, are kind of like breaking down a little bit, because I do think that you have capital flight leaving Europe because they're basically like castrating themselves over there on purpose to have their like Panopticon, Davos, you know, CBDC issued by the IMF dystopia thing. But you have capital flight, they're going to safe haven assets. So that's going to be your 10-year treasuries and the Dow, but of course gold and silver. And you would think Bitcoin as well, but if you look in the past few weeks, gold and silver have kind of, you know, crept up, broken out a little bit. And I think that's going to continue as we have interest rates keep going up. People, of course, go to where money's going to be treated best. But you would think that Bitcoin breaks out as well. So is there no interest in Bitcoin? Like, why is the volatility so low? And we had recently this week BlackRock partnering with Coinbase. Was it Coinbase or Circle?
Yeah, it was Coinbase.
Yeah. And just offering more, because of the market demand, more Bitcoin products, because they don't have to. But I think like the futures market manipulation of gold that's coming over to Bitcoin. And so they're trying to keep hold the price down. And arguably, I mean, people like Magoo and others on Twitter say, hey, we're going to see 12K. Let's go. That might even happen. And so I think it's with these fiat instruments to manipulate markets, the powers that be want to scoop up as much corn as possible.
No, I definitely get that too. But why? What is the benefit of JP Morgan, you know, other than obviously trading on the price? I think that there's some other incentives here about manipulating the price of gold. So why don't you get into that? Like, what are some of the potential incentives of not just JP Morgan, but, you know, some of the other powers that be for manipulating this gold price?
Yeah, and I might be just reading off what we're going to publish next week a little bit. And I just kind of like pulled this out of my ass like less than 24 hours ago. But essentially, as I referred to them as Davos earlier, and I mean, people hear this term, the Davos crowd. Just think old money, as I said, old money, European, Malthusian oligarchs that basically want their colonies back, commies. Did I say eugenicists already? I don't know if I did. Klaus Schwab, World Economic Forum, all those guys. And they essentially run the ECB. ECB is the central bank, European Central Bank. And they have no assets and they can go bankrupt. And with Basel III, Basel is basically where the central banks decide, you know, how they're going to basically like back themselves, whether it's like commodities or how much gold ratio to, you know, credit, whatever the case might be. Basel III, and I'm paraphrasing, so if I get off track, just let me know. But basically, Basel III is going to enable all the credit-denominated gold, like paper gold that the ECB has, basically say, hey, that's going to count as your gold reserves, because the ECB is desperate to be solvent. So I'll just leave it at that there as I look more into the article that I wrote. But I mean, when I first sent you this, like, what were your initial thoughts and questions? Because I mean, I'm sure the same questions that you might have may be the questions that the audience has.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, from the perspective of just the average person, the average Bitcoiner, I would say, right, is the biggest argument that has been made that I have heard is that, you know, gold is this hard, sound money that, you know, it's always going to be exchangeable. And, you know, you always hear the Bitcoin versus gold argument, and a lot of the even maxis compare it to digital gold, right? So I think that there's, you know, this new, like, the new Basel III that you kind of mentioned in this article. And so I don't know if I'm giving it away, the entire article that we're going to publish here.
Let me just, like, give a little bit of premise, like, what Davos's, like, main motivations are here. So Davos wants to destroy the American economy by forcing Congress and the Fed to deficit spend the U.S. into oblivion. And the replacement of the current monetary system would be a new globalist one that's based on IMF-backed central bank digital currency. And so Europe wants this model to be put into place because the ECB can and eventually will, because that's their intention, to go bankrupt. They liquidate themselves, kind of like the George Soros thing with the pound but they liquidate themselves and basically give up, you know, IMF is going to control this ride. So this is intended by Davos, and they wanted first, though, destroy America's economy before they fail in order to prevent capital flight out of Europe and have the capital flight leave America and come back into Europe. So it's kind of like a race to the bottom, who can knock each other out first. And that's why Powell, and I'll probably get into one of these later articles, but that's why Powell has been arguably doing stealth quantitative tightening since June 2021, so last June FOMC meeting, and has been able to raise rates and re-indexing their debt to SOFR instead of LIBOR. So basically, why manipulate the price of gold down? So back to gold, Davos needs the gold price to be high so they can use their manipulated paper gold holdings as collateral. That is what Basel III allows them to do. So one could argue that gold traders at JP Morgan and most likely other banks, right? Because all the shareholders of the Fed, other banks are manipulating the price of gold to the downside to keep confidence, as I already mentioned earlier, in the dollar dominant, and keep the confidence high in the overall current financial system. So Davos needs gold prices to be high so that individual countries literally within Europe become more solvent, which takes some pressure off their government bonds, because we've seen recently, you know, Christine Lagarde and her ilk had to sell off German bonds to help support Greece. Because remember, they don't have assets. They can go bankrupt. It's almost like the fixed supply of Bitcoin. They have a fixed supply of shitty debt instruments that they like shuffle and like sell off and buy back to like keep the countries afloat. Which, I mean, this is only one part of the what's causing like these national populistic like uprisings. There's a video that I shared by some guy on BitChute, but basically did kind of like a political breakdown of Italy basically being one of these European countries that are shown to be sovereign and leading the way against these globalist agenda, which is amazing. And you have these farmer uprisings all throughout Europe as well. So of course, fix the money, fix the world. Once you fix the money and the financial plumbing, you won't have all this chaos amongst society. But so let me see here. And there's a report that I found too that's going to be included in that article. But basically, to keep afloat in the ECB in Europe and solvent, ECB may have to use Basel III to save their asses. All right. So the new rules Basel III would basically sound like this. In layman's terms, under Basel III, Europe's unallocated gold reserves would be replaced by their paper holdings, which is what Davos mostly has, via the ability to print infinite money via the offshore dollar market, or ODM, as I like to call. And if you want to do kind of a deep dive course of euro dollars, offshore dollar market, they're synonymous. It has nothing to do with the actual euro. Of course, Jeff Snyder is a solid source for that too. But going back to things, in layman's terms, it's basically saying, oh, hey, ECB, you don't have enough gold? No worries, bro. Just use those paper holdings that you have, and those are going to count as your balance sheet collateral. And so Davos needs this to happen because they're, as I said, basically bankrupt. Otherwise, if they don't, then the ECB that is why the ECB needs gold prices to be higher, and that's why the Fed needs them to be lower, right? On the flip side, a higher gold price would undermine the Fed's power and credibility. So that's why JP Morgan and Team Fed, as I call Team Fed, just being the commercial banks and regional banks, have been manipulating the gold price. And so to me, at the end of the day, this is kind of like this whole JP Morgan scandal is a hit piece. All three of those dudes were acquitted, right? And this is kind of like a flashback to earlier in the year. Maybe it was late last year, but when they tried to take out Powell for insider trading, they got two of the Fed chairmen, but not Powell. And then they had to postpone his reconfirmation as Fed chair for 6 months. And I think this is just another example of, yeah, there are competing factions and interests of the elites. And it's only in our best interest that we be on the team of the bankers on Wall Street that we hate. But I'd rather go with those guys who are actually maybe looking into building the next monetary system on top of Bitcoin, which people listening probably want to shoot themselves in the head right now because that just sounds fucking idiotic. But we had reports a few weeks ago from the Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland in St. Louis saying Bitcoin Lightning Network as money is more efficient than Fedwire and how it's green and good for the environment or whatever. Could those have just been academic papers and grants or whatever to appease a voter base? I don't know. But regardless, I think there are sovereigntists within America at the high echelons of power that don't want to go along for the ride of globalism. Because if you have a CBDC issue from the IMF that the Federal Reserve has to follow the IMF's like diktat, so like from the IMF to the Fed to your pocket, you get rid of the commercial banks, which is the largest lobbying institution in the world. So, I mean, the banks and the credit creation, that's like what the Fed needs to survive. And you get rid of the whole Federal Reserve System banking cartel. And I mean, basically it's Jamie Dimon and Klaus Schwab like butting heads saying like, no, fuck you. Like I want this like monopoly, like money power. Like you go do your Panopticon, like Euro, whatever plaything over there. But you know, don't tase me, bro. Don't take my banks, bro. And that's really just objectively reading in between the lines and also hearing things, what Tom says and people in the legacy system, like on a Slack server, being able to have conversations with them, reading in between the lines, like what people like Danny DiMartino Booth are talking about. Like she retweeted one of my threads where I'm talking about this like a month ago. And so if that's just not like a nail in the coffin of there is something else going on here and there's nuance within the power elites, then I don't know what is.
Yeah, no, I agree with you here, but we actually got a question from the chat here. So, I mean, you're kind of going along the lines that it almost seems like the Fed versus the central bankers, right? So,
yeah,
like the Fed.
I mean, they're still central bankers, okay? They still work on Keynesianism. It's just they are trying to fight for the right to survive. They don't want to lose the power that they have of the banks. But they're still Keynesians, and they will turn around eventually and stab us in the back. And we probably will see hyperinflation eventually. But, you know, for now, I'd rather be on Team Fed than Team Klaus Schwab and his banana hammock shoving CBDCs and bugs down my throat.
Hey, I hear you on that. So you did mention inflation, and that brings us to the next story of the CPI print of 8.5%. So it seemed like the market was kind of ripping off this news, and it seems insane to me that we're actually celebrating an 8.5% manipulated, granted, CPI print, because the CPI is always manipulated, no matter however you want to look at it, right?
As my friend Walton on Twitter says, there's no bigger lie than CPI.
Exactly, right? So, I mean, we see energy prices year over year, 75% increase. You know, everything from food at home up 13%, new vehicles up 10%. So just insane numbers here on the full breakdown. But, you know, we have the White House saying that month over month, it's been 0%. So those already elevated prices didn't get any more elevated. So that's something that should be celebrated. So, I mean, like, what do you think about all this, you know, the CPI nonsense that they're putting out there and like the case that it makes for Bitcoin when, you know, we're having rampant inflation and, you know, you said it before, like maybe we're not at hyperinflation yet, but it seems like a couple other things could just turn, like maybe this China-Taiwan conflict goes full force and I don't know, the government decides to print more money. You know, what do you think of all these, you know, CP lies that we got in there? Shout out to CP.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's nonsense, just like you said. I mean, we have had negative GDP for the past 2 months. That's the definition of a recession. But as communists, they want to keep changing the definitions of things. And we just had midterms coming up and the Democrats know they're going to lose, right? I'm no Republican either. But again, just like choosing the better two evils. You want Davos or you want Team Fed? Do you want Democrats and Republicans are run by Davos as well? You got your Marco Rubios and your Pompeos, just like your neocon, colonialists, whatever, Anglophiles. Like they're all run by Davos. Davos will probably pivot from the radical left and pivot towards that, you know, warmongering right, because they are going to lose in the midterms. And so they'll have to pivot their strategy. But again, this is why you can't separate politics from economics, from the numbers, okay? Because one of the numbers are manipulated for political gains. And I think that's basically what we are facing right now. So yeah, Bitcoin should be ripping, but it's not. And maybe the manipulated low price of Bitcoin is in everyone's favor, especially the pleb. So, you know, be heavy cash. Embrace the strength of the dollar if you can. But I know a lot of people are hurting right now. And I mean, yeah, just stack sats when you can. And don't believe these numbers that they keep purporting, because that is just them pandering to whatever is left of their constituency.
Look, I'm going to push back to you on you about corn not ripping, right? So, I mean, what was the...
We had 24 candidates. That's nice. What is it now?
So, I mean, but on that, right? So the low was about 17, 18,000, somewhere in that range. So, I mean, we're up 30% from that low, if you really look back and think about it. So,
yeah.
Granted, it's not ripping the... you know, traditional bull markets, 10%, you know, every hour, something crazy like that, you know, massive, you know, volatility, but we're still seeing it, you know, perform pretty well, I would say, you know, over this period. And granted, I still think it's kind of correlated when you look at it compared to a lot of these risk on growth stocks.
Very much.
Like that. And so I'm hoping, you know, maybe after the next halving or whatnot, that it kind of, you know, gets away from that. But I still think that, you know, amidst all this, it is still performing, you know, fairly decently. Granted, like, you know, like you said, it's still cheap compared to the all-time high of 69K. Nice. And we should, you know, keep that going. So, I mean, I see it as a good buying opportunity. Will it go lower? I don't know. I honestly think like maybe like we haven't seen the lows from everything, but I think all in all, like it's still performing like, you know, fairly decently. I don't really like to look at price too much because, you know, I just, you know, continue to stack. But yeah, I think it's really interesting how it is kind of performing, and it is up like 30% from its bottom right now. And so, yeah, I mean, I think the argument of it not being an inflation hedge, you know, you saw the bears kind of dancing on everybody's grave when it bounced from 69 to 17. I don't know. I think like we're just kind of still in these 4-year cycle periods, and you know, the CPI prints and everything else, like it's just, it's still kind of correlated when it comes to the financial markets. And
yeah. So,
I think eventually it'll get away from that, but you know, right now it's a tough time for everything in the market. So it shouldn't really be, you know, a big knock against Bitcoin just because it's not at its all time high.
Yeah. If anything, look, I'm not a TA guy. Okay. Like what little technical analysis I've learned has been in the past year, because, Tom does a market report twice a week. And what we do is we look at monthly, and like the lowest time frame I think is like weekly charts, but we look at monthly, quarterly, and I think those are the patterns that are crucial. So all these people, like, not to hate on them, but all these people in tourist spaces, and granted I'm not a trader either, and a lot of these people are, but to basically play with your crystal, imaginary crystal ball, like what Bitcoin's going to do, it's just, you're not doing yourself any favors if you're looking like hourly, daily. It's just more like, I guess, weekly and corrections and where resistance may or may not be. Like, that's helpful, but Also, this is why I think it's pretty crucial in understanding what's happening in the rest of the world, which I'm sure a lot of people do. But again, within maybe, you know, not to like call out any dates or specific numbers, but within the next, 18 months, 2 years, I think the more capital flight we see, as I mentioned, we're going to see that go towards safe haven assets. And maybe, like, you're right, we don't break the four-year cycle, because in 2 years, that's when the next happening is, right? And so supply and demand shocks in Bitcoin, whether or not that's true. Well, I think a week ago we heard that stock to flow is officially bullshit. And even I think Bitcoin Tina like came to admit that he was wrong about that too. Or it's crazy. But again, capital is going to flee to where it's going to be treated best. And the powers that be know how valuable Bitcoin is. So regardless, and again, I'm contradicting myself saying, don't just say Bitcoin's going to moon in the future and we're going to be good. Like, yeah, that's true. But on our horizons, and maybe less than 2 years, maybe we see some of that breaking out happen. But who knows? Like, we are in unprecedented times and uncharted waters, where I wrote a song called End the Fed, and now I have in my Twitter name, Pal is my pal. So nobody knows what the hell could actually happen. By the way, at the end of the day, yes, End the Fed. I am a Rothbardian, Misesian, Luongan, like central planning always fails. Okay. And that's why we have Bitcoin, right? Transfer and bring for second bill for banks, all of that shit. And money, sound money fixes this. Bitcoin does fix this. But again, it's just crucial to, if you're going to have an opinion, just be able to zoom out, look at all, like, look beyond just Bitcoin, look at other commodities and like why people might be doing what they're doing and what their incentives are, who benefits from what policy, that kind of stuff. So eventually Bitcoin wins, but if you want to be a part of the conversation, put in some work. And I know that that's hard, right? I got a full-time job. I fiat mine. But, you know, when I get distracted on my fiat mining, I'm just like trolling on Slack and Twitter and trying to learn new shit. As I'm sure a lot of people are that are watching this program.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's like the biggest thing, right? It's just kind of like digging in. And, you know, we talked a little bit about how econ and politics all kind of like mix into the financial markets and everything like that too. And you see that Bitcoin and politics kind of have been mixing too lately, right? So I think the government just passed this methane emissions bill, which is going to give $1.5 billion to natural gas and oil companies to figure out ways to capture that flare gas, which I think is super interesting, because, you know, we've gone through this whole song and dance with Senator Warren and some of these other people who just really give shit to Bitcoin mining, saying how it's not ESG friendly and, you know, how ESG is all this and that. And, you know, Bitcoin miners have been capturing this flare gas for some time. And now it's essentially they're passing this bill to incentivize, miners to kind of dig into more of this capturing of this flare off gas. So, I'd be curious to hear what your thoughts are on ESG overall, and I guess just the capture of flare gas, because previously that wasn't considered quote unquote ESG or environmentally friendly.
Yeah. So is this like a clause in the inflation reduction thing they just passed?
Yeah, it's an additional bill that they okay. passed. Yeah.
So. Okay. So it was completely separate. Exactly. Okay. So yeah, that's crazy, because, you know, maybe some sound minded people in Congress were like, okay, well, we got to hedge this somehow. So yeah, that'd be great. I mean, a couple months ago, Exxon said that they were looking into Bitcoin mining. And if you look at Russia, they have the marginal cost to produce energy. So people like Marty Bent and others have talked about Bitcoin mining being a matter of national security. So why not pass legislation that benefits America? If you are actually in Congress and you're a sovereigntist and you want to preserve the principles of what this great land was founded on, then yeah, it would make complete sense to basically counter this baby version of Build Back Better, which was intended to, again, deficit spend the country into oblivion. That's really this to me. This is just another white pill, right? And that's kind of why I like this like Team Fed thesis, because it is choosing the lesser of two evils, but it's also a white pill, and seeing that like the opposite of a CBDC would be Bitcoin, and it just like the stars are aligning. Like Bitcoin is the way America preserves itself, and whether that's a like a quasi what Judy Shelton wanted to do if under the Trump administration she got onto the like the Fed board, what she wanted to do was basically remonetize gold by having 20, 50 year treasuries where 5% of the coupon was in gold. And that's basically how they could balance their budget and basically fix the economy in some way. And I understand too, we're not going to have hyper-Bitcoinization. This is going to be a gradual transition. So it would only make sense to me that part of that basket of whatever backs the treasury is going to be gold and Bitcoin as well. And plus, we're probably going to be building our monetary system on top of it. Fingers crossed. It's not a certainty, but fingers crossed. And whether it's like that's a Fed dollar on top of Bitcoin, maybe using Taro or whatever. Like there are so many things that are just now coming out. And Fedimints as well. I haven't dug too deep into it, but I've been a part of some Twitter spaces where they're talking about it. And it's basically like a rebirthing of a healthy banking system. Because banking in itself is not an evil, right? Usury, arguably, is the evil. But I don't think that you're going to ever not have like a credit system of some sort. People are going to use debt. But when you have Bitcoin, when you plug your financial system into Bitcoin, you know, not to channel Michael Saylor or anything, but when you plug into the Bitcoin network and you just realign all the incentives, I mean, you, in a unbastardized sense, build back better. And I think, again, you have more sovereigntists and that are trying to run this country, not into the ground. Than you think. And so this bill is maybe just another representation of that. But again, it could be pandering, right? I think this inflation recovery bill, whatever the hell it's called, I don't think they're actually going to, again, like I will eat my shorts if I'm wrong with this, but like 87,000 new IRS agents, that's ridiculous. And of course, they're not going to hire them tomorrow. But again, I feel like this is just, again, political. They passed this thing because the Biden economy shit. And so they passed this thing and they manipulated CPI numbers lower than they were than expected. And it's all political. It's all about emotion and psychology and manipulation of all of that. And similar a few years ago when we saw AOC pass her new Green Deal or whatever, that never went through. Even Democrats argued against that. So again, I think all of this is just rhetoric. Whether or not, I mean, I would love to see, I mean, do we know for sure that this bill passed? This renewable flare thing? Did it actually pass?
It did pass. And it was Senator Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and Joe Manchin of West Virginia that led the charge on this one.
That's interesting.
Oh, wait, no, that's the IRS bill. I'm sorry.
Okay, I was going to say that, yeah. Because they basically had to, like, bribe Manchin. Because I think he's only a Democrat by, like, his location. Like, yeah. He's like I think he's like, a really big coal advocate as well.
Oh, 100%.
So they really had to bribe him into, like, signing this inflation recovery thing.
Yeah, and you led me right perfectly into the next story about the hiring of the 87K more IRS agents for taxation purposes, right? So, I mean, I think it's crazy, this entire bill. So they're looking to spend an extra almost $80 billion over the next 10 years. This money is expected to go to hiring more IRS agents, 87K, essentially doubling the size to, quote, crack down on the wealthy tax evaders and to modernize its technology. And so I want you to hear this stat. So as of 2019, I didn't find anything more recent, but the top 1% accounted for about 20% of the adjusted gross income in the United States and paid 38.8% of the total federal income taxes paid. So Despite what the politicians want to tell you, this increase of the IRS is not to go at the rich. I think it's more so to go at, you know, the middle class and essentially to go at too the you know, the people trying to use Bitcoin and other methods to kind of build their wealth and maybe, you know, find non-KYC routes. And we'll get into a story later about that. But, you know, find some of these ways to get, you know, and hide some of that wealth so they don't get taxed out the ass, essentially. And so they're hiring, they're doubling the entire force to go at it. So, I mean, you know, where to, one, where does all this money come from? And two, like, I mean, how are they going to, you know, do they think they're just going to earn all this $80 billion back within the next 10 years by just, you know, taxing people way, way more or what?
No, this bill is Davos, okay? Like, they run the institutional, not institutional, they run the establishment American political system. And this is just another ploy to deficit spend America into oblivion, cause capital flight out of here, tell foreigners to not invest their money here, and to just embarrass us. And they're doing this politically with how we pulled out of Afghanistan. They're doing this culturally with critical race theory and, you know, training education in schools and just trying to divide and conquer and just cause chaos like the fall of Rome. And so this bill is just a manifestation of that. And it goes against what the banks want, right? And yeah, how are we going to pay for it? Like, of course, we're going to print it, but that's going to, again, lose credibility in the dollar and treasuries. And that is exactly what Powell and the banks are fighting against. So again, this is all just rhetoric. I don't think this will go through. Hopefully it doesn't, because this did not actually pass, right?
No, this hasn't passed just yet. This is, you know, been proposed by the two people that I mentioned earlier. And so, I mean, I think it's just insane though. I mean, that it's even a thought that this can potentially get passed. And I honestly, I wouldn't be surprised with, you know, the people in power right now, if it does. Obviously that's all speculation, but I mean, at the same time, like, you know, that's been their whole rhetoric and their whole, I guess, marketing scheme behind the Democratic Party lately is just like, you know, tax the rich. That's what AOC has basically made her entire platform on. So obviously it just like encourages that kind of rhetoric. But I mean, I think if you dig a little deeper, it's, you know, obvious, we even have Kelly in the chat too, adding that most of the audits historically are for the poor and middle class.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I've seen like different graphs of demographics and, you know, poverty lines and where that bill is actually going to affect. Sorry, I got distracted by my shitty monologue. I was going off a minute ago, but yeah, Davos is basically trying to gut out the middle class, right? You have people, institutions like BlackRock buying up all the single family homes. I mean, this is just another way to do that, right? It's not tax the rich. It's tax the main threat of the state. And that main threat is you, your productive capital, your human ingenuity, your natural inclination to better yourself and your loved ones around you. That is what these bills are in a direct attack on, is you. And so that's basically how you destroy America, because who else in the world would want to move to a place like that? So they couldn't pass Build Back Better, so they had to get this through. And they haven't gotten it through, thank God, but hopefully it doesn't.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I don't think that, you know, I mean, I don't know at this point, like, whether it would get passed or not, right? But they're doing all these measures to try to, you know, capture as much tax dollars as they possibly can. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of leads me into the next story where they're banning Tornado Cash. So what Tornado Cash is essentially a mixing service, but essentially any single American that uses this is now you know, a potential criminal. I think the one thing that this kind of points out though is that essentially it's a mixing service for shitcoins, right? So it uses Ethereum. And any Ethereum wallet that's connected essentially, you know, is now faced with criminal charges, and it's been linked to a North Korean hacking group that has stolen allegedly $625 million from Axel's Infinity's Ronin network. So, I mean, I think that, you know, it's kind of attack on the middle class trying to get away and maybe go to Ethereum. But I think it makes even a better case for some of these non-KYC options that you have in Bitcoin. And I think that's the one thing that Bitcoin offers that a lot of these other shitcoins don't, is like kind of like a way to get non-KYC and, you know, avoid a lot of these probably like sanctioned or blacklisted services that, you know, like the shit coins you basically have to use in order to do that. So I think, you know, although like they're coming for you and they're coming for more money, I think it's they're making like indirectly a better case for Bitcoin. And, you know, I'd be curious to hear what you think about that. Like, do you think, you know, one eventually, like every single sat is going to be linked to some KYC eventually? Or do you think that there's going to be some way that, you know, if you wanted to stay non-KYC, you know, forever, you might be able to do that, at least, you know, maybe for our lifetime?
Maybe. I mean, I didn't really pay attention to this shitcoin story because it's a shitcoin. And so they're going to get the long dick of the law from the SEC more so, maybe. I don't know. I mean, Ethereum Foundation probably has good lobbyists. They've probably been astroturfed by some sort of Davos entity, maybe. But like, regardless, at the end of the day, one Bitcoin is one Bitcoin. Okay. So people argue like, hey, maybe you should have a KYC stack and like a non-KYC stack. And like, it's just, not to say the cliche, but we're so early, man. But yeah, we're early. We don't really know what the shit's going to look like. So I think regardless, if you have Bitcoin mixed, not mixed, KYC, not KYC, virgin, I mean, you're fine. So, I mean, maybe have a stack for fucking round and finding out. I don't know. I like, if you ask me, I'm the worst Bitcoiner. Like, I have a node, but I don't run it. In fact, here, where it is. It is.
This is live. He's showing us his node right here. Great audio content. Some of the best that you could ever get. That's why you come to the state of Bitcoin. Oh,
shit. Blurred out. Showing?
Now he's blurred completely. Oh, there we go.
That is none other than Al's Lacrosse, Dirtbag Al.
Shout out Dirtbag Al.
For fans of the Tales from the Crypt podcast.
Nice. But shout out Dirtbag Al.
Yeah, I mean, I put this thing together in like 2020, but I'm not like technically challenged. Like, I could sit down if I cared, but I mean, not every Bitcoiner is the same. So some people are more inclined to like learn how the shit works than others. Like I've kind of told y'all, I'm more about like the 30,000 foot view of the world and, you know, the moving pieces and kind of some granular aspects, monetary policy and whatnot. I'd like to get back into this eventually, but you know, I don't feel like it's fair for me to give advice like what you should do, what not to do as far as mixing or non-mixing. And I know you didn't ask that, but it's just, it's a crazy early world in Bitcoin. So play around with this stuff if you want. It's great if you run your own node. I mean, you're basically doing an audit on the Fed in a way. I mean, you are, you're not, whatever. But again, like, nuance is the word of the century for now.
Well, yeah, I mean, I agree with you here. So I think there's going to be either three or four kind of Bitcoiners going forward, right? So there's going to be the mom and pops that, you know, don't really understand it, that are always going to keep it on an exchange, going to do, you know, that as much as people advise them not to be, they're not going to trust themselves to really hold it. There's going to be the second group that holds it in cold storage, but, you know, that's about as much as they do. They probably bought it all KYC. There's going to be that third group that, you know, maybe has some non-KYC, has some KYC, runs their own node, but that's about it. And then there's going to be that last group that probably has their own miner at home, you know, does their own node, is completely KYC free, has gone down the complete rabbit hole. So I think, you know, there's room for everything, like, in there. And, like, I don't think, you know, as much as we should tell people to, you know, hold your own keys, I think there's still going to be people out there that still probably don't do it.
Yeah, definitely the hold your own keys. Like,
I go that far.
I mean, boomers, maybe some Gen Xers, whatever, down the road, generations, like, yes, there are going to be, like, Fediment options or custodial solutions. We need that. Not every single person will actually own their own UTXO on this planet. But as far as, like, should you run like a Lightning node and open Lightning channels and all that stuff? It's like, yeah, you can play around with that, but I don't know if that's actually going to be the standard when we have these other solutions, especially if what you have with Fediments are offer of like all this privacy. And it's basically like a stable, like, you know, US dollar backed on Bitcoin and it's like private. Like, if that's the case, are we even going to be having to transact in Bitcoin at that point? So again, nobody knows what the future is going to look like, but all these things are make me bullish as fuck, because we're, again, a cliche, we're building the bear market, guys. But with all these things coming out, I mean, how can you not be excited and white-pilled or orange-pilled as fuck right now?
Oh, so, exactly. I agree 100%, right? So, I mean, you know, it's interesting, too, because I started this show, I don't know, like earlier this year, and essentially it's been in a bear market ever since, but I have no problem putting together 6+ stories every single week to talk about it. Yeah. And, you know, we get big institutions coming on board. We get countries coming on board all the time. And, you know, you mentioned it a little bit earlier too. BlackRock now is partnering with Coinbase to offer more Bitcoin services. And so not only is BlackRock probably the biggest, you know, investment bank, or I don't even know how to categorize them. They essentially own everything. But they're now partnering with Coinbase to offer Bitcoin services. And I think there's a lot of layers to this story that we could potentially dive into. But essentially, Coinbase first is being investigated by the SEC for its staking services, which staking obviously has been bullshit. And I think that, you know, those services shouldn't be offered because it's a lot of overpromising and under-delivering. And then now BlackRock is partnering with Coinbase to offer these services. And now BlackRock is launching its own private trust focusing strictly on Bitcoin.
So, right. It's like a GBTC competitor sort of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, not only is like the SEC kind of refusing to do like a spot Bitcoin ETF or anything like that to quote unquote protect the investor, BlackRock's offering it for essentially their high net worth individuals and everybody else.
Right.
You know, BlackRock, who runs the world, it's kind of surprising because I was listening to a space today with Tone Vaze up there speaking, and he was essentially surprised that BlackRock got in because...
Was it one that Albie was running? Because I was in that earlier this morning, and we were talking about this a little bit.
It's like the NFT, like some shitcoin.
Oh, never mind. Sorry. Go ahead.
But anyway, he was going off on, like, he was surprised that essentially... the Bitcoin or that BlackRock was getting into Bitcoin because, you know, the market cap is so small. But I've heard other points that maybe they're following Fidelity and, you know, they're kind of just dipping their toe in, but maybe not fully going in. But I mean, I think it's interesting, right? So we're seeing a lot of these institutions kind of come in even after seeing the volatility, after seeing it drop from 69K to what is it, 24 or so now. So, I mean, I think like, why can't, how can you not be bullish on Bitcoin right now when you're seeing, you know, big enough institutions like BlackRock get in? Like, all right, is Bitcoin not big enough for everybody then at this point? Like, how can you, like, I don't know. I'd like to hear your arguments. Maybe you have an opposite opinion of me. I honestly don't like that they're partnering with Coinbase on this, but you know, they were kind of the first mover in this space. So maybe it makes sense. I don't know.
So what is your fear about this? Because they only have a focus towards high net worth individuals. Because if that's the case, like, this doesn't mean that like all on-ramps to Bitcoin are turned off and plebs can't buy. Like, what's the fear?
My fear is that, you know, like essentially there's always that big argument that people try to make about MicroStrategy gobbling up a bunch of Bitcoin, right? That it's becoming centralized. Obviously, that's bullshit because they don't have that much if you really look at the total supply. But BlackRock has a lot more money than MicroStrategy, you know, and they have a lot more access to capital. that kind of stuff too. And it's just like, I think like Bitcoin doesn't really need a big institution like this.
No, not at all. But it definitely helps.
Yeah. So I want to hear that argument. Why do you think it helps?
I mean, so this is what I brought up in that space I was in earlier. I was in only in like 10 minutes, but if someone like Black, like compare the size of BlackRock to GBTC and the whole arbitrage game that they did, and basically they use futures markets, I would think, where the, it was a whole price manipulation with the cash carry trade thing with GBTC and the premium stuff that caused us to go to 69K. So, you know, if you just swap out the players there with Coinbase and BlackRock, then do we go to 169K or whatever? So that's exciting. Bitcoin doesn't need, or actually, I don't know. I mean, so it certainly doesn't help with hyper-Bitcoinization, I guess, but I mean, Bitcoin's for enemies, right? We've heard that argument. I don't think BlackRock is, and this is going to be an unpopular opinion, but I kind of picked this up from Tom and Martin Armstrong as well, which I was actually excited to. I was in a space with Tone, and Tone was like the first Bitcoiner that I heard like brought up who Martin Armstrong is. Not many people talk about his story. Basically locked up for a dozen years for creating this like algorithm that the feds wanted, but he wouldn't give up. But regardless, so Martin Armstrong wrote, I think in one of his private blogs a month or so ago, that BlackRock is, like the ECB, is arguably bankrupt. They just have exposure to assets, but they don't really have assets. They don't really have cash. And with interest rates continuing to rise, which I firmly believe they will, expect at least 75 basis point raise in at the next FOMC, hopefully 100, who knows. But as those continue to rise and capital becomes more expensive, and the Fed destroys the offshore dollar markets and access to cheap capital becomes impossible or just too much of a burden because it's too expensive and Europe becomes bankrupt. What does BlackRock really have? I mean, talk about deflation, right? Or at least in price. Steve Lubko, I'm probably mispronouncing his name, but he wrote a piece on this recently of how basically there's so much like money printing and fiat happening just in the price appreciation of assets. And so when you raise interest rates and you have crashes in assets, I mean, as far as I know, in regards to the real estate market, BlackRock is just sitting on cash, trying to get as much cash as possible. And these like house flipping agencies are selling at a loss. Interest rates are fucking shit up. Like they are. And the Fed is asserting its monetary independence by doing so and not being tethered to the rest of the global monetary system, not being tethered to our arbitrarily manipulated interest rate, which is LIBOR, and reindexing themselves to a secure overnight funding rate, which is what SOFR is. And these are the building blocks and tools to actually make them survive as everyone else goes bankrupt and liquidates themselves as interest rates go up. BlackRock is Davos through and through. It was the CARES Act that enabled BlackRock same access to the Fed window as the banks, which undermined the banking power that the central bank, like Federal Reserve cartel, had. So if someone, basically non-bank like BlackRock, can come get dibs on treasuries and kind of be in that same category with the banks where they scoop up the first 50% of treasuries that are issued, that's signifying that Klaus Schwab, the WEF, BlackRock, all these corporations, because their ideology is that corporations are going to overthrow the nation, I mean, the notion of the nation state. Larry Fink is going after Jerome Powell's lunch and Jamie Dimon's lunch. And so, again, this is the Fed using their tools to fight back against this, like this globalism chicanery. And maybe this is BlackRock being desperate and partnering with Coinbase and getting more exposure to Bitcoin. Maybe like that's just pulling that on my ass, but I do believe Tom and Martin Armstrong saying that, you know, BlackRock could go bankrupt as Europe basically goes tits up. So I don't know. That was a very long-winded answer. I'm just spitballing.
No, I mean, hey, you never know what's going to happen these days, right? I mean, we've seen companies like Celsius and some of these other ones blow up from like very little valuation to like, I mean, Celsius, prime example, right? So especially in the crypto industry, they were nothing in 2017 when they first started, and then they valued at $4 billion, and then now they're bankrupt. Same thing with BlockFi. Right. So BlockFi was valued multi-billion dollars. They got bought out for what, $235 million. So at a huge, huge loss. So, I mean, I don't think like anything's out of the question these days where a company is like so big they cannot fail. So, I mean, it'd just be, especially somebody that has like such big allocation to assets. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, we're seeing.
You are going to see price correction. Exactly. And that is what we need. It's like the Fed is forcing the Austrian like monetary crackup boom and all these bullshit zombie companies. What they make up like 25% of the S&P or some shit. I don't know. But basically, they're all going to die out. Capital is going to be moved to where it's treated best and reinvested back into things that make sense based on market demand and what the people actually need. And I think when you're talking about BlackRock or all these other nations, that's just happened. The same thing's happening just on a wider scale.
Exactly. And I couldn't agree with you more here too. I mean, especially with like the growth companies. So yeah, I mean, my theory is like growth is going to get fucking just absolutely shithoused this time around, because like raising rates, they've basically been a lot of these growth companies from existence have just been, you know, able to borrow so much money at such cheap, you know, interest rates that now that it's getting more expensive, they're like, oh shit, I actually have to make money. And so, you know, I mean, it's definitely an interesting time to be in. And I think that
we are just completely over financialized as a country. And I think this capital flight is going to, as all those companies die off, we might actually, you know, get some balls back and actually be more of a manufacturing nation. As you know, whatever happens in Taiwan goes down, that might be the kick in the nads that we need to create more fabrication facilities. So we are having like a fourth turning great reset, but again, I'm completely white-pilled, and I think all of this is heading in the right direction for America and the world. I mean, you have things like BRICS coming up, and I hear it's like pretty premature, it's not as robust and built out as people would or would not like it to be. But I mean, you've got Russia that is sitting on the world's commodities and basically arguably forcing the world, or at least like Eurasia, on a quasi gold ruble standard. And what does that mean for the rest of the world? What does that mean for the dollar? And what does that mean to people that actually care about rebuilding America? You know, it's a price mechanism is what it is. Like what Hayek says, it's information. It is telling people where they should be investing their time and capital and for what purposes based on market demand.
Exactly. And I think that's a great place to wrap it up. Phil, you've been so generous with your time. And absolutely banger of an episode. I really enjoyed having this conversation with you.
Likewise, dude.
Yeah. So I prefaced it a little bit at the beginning of the show, but why don't you tell everybody what you got going on and where they can find you?
Yeah. So Mr. Sue, it's my Twitter handle. That's MRPSEU, like Sue, like a boy named Sue, which is my podcast. A PSEU, like pseudonymous pseudonym, you know, Bitcoin-esque sort of stuff. But yeah, I've been doing that show for, I think, since beginning 2018. And I have my own personal feed. I haven't been posting that. I've been posting on the Bitcoin Made Simple podcast, not to be confused with Simply Bitcoin, but those are great guys as well. But the Bitcoin Made Simple, I think it's Bitcoin Simply on Twitter, but I post my episodes over to that feed with Corey Tusek, who's the CEO of Movies Plus, which I'm a big fan of, and I've been kind of like helping them out on the side. They're basically a Netflix competitor. So burning down the cathedral of the mainstream media and cancel culture and putting actual uncensored content that people are hungry for. So trying to help them grow, line up deals with that kind of stuff. But Boy Named Sue, Bitcoin Made Simple podcast. I do that with Corey and Luke Mikich, who fans of the show might be familiar with, my Australian friend, great lad. So it's my show. Corey does a show on Mondays and Luke does one on Wednesdays. And we usually do news on Thursdays, which is today, but we've been doing kind of like a summer vacation hiatus, a lot of stuff happening in our lives, especially Movies Plus. So been busy with that. On my Twitter, my pinned tweet is my music video I made a couple years ago. It's called End the Fed or ETF. Super proud of that. Like, I'm a musician first and foremost. So that was a really fun project. I collaborated with Richard James out of Australia. And he, if you're not familiar with him, he did the Bitcoin films such as Hard Money, Anatomy of the State, and one about the petrodollar as well. But we collabed on the imagery, and I did all of the music myself. And Bitkill Yanowski, profound artist in the Bitcoin scene. You'll probably be familiar with his work. He does the Mynode work, the BitBlock Boom artwork, BTC Pay Server, just all that good shit. But he did the artwork for the album or the single cover that you'll see when you search in Spotify or whatever your music streaming service of choice is. When you just type Mr. Sue ETF, he did the artwork. It's basically like a cartoonized like sea monster Federal Reserve building, and it's got a giant Bitcoin orange comet like flying into its face, and it looks all scared. It was just beautiful, perfect. But anyway, that's my jam, what I'm into. You can follow me on Twitter for hot takes about the Fed, monetary policy, and geopolitics. And yeah, if you have any questions about this stuff, you can, my DMs are open, so you can always send me a query, and I'll try my best to answer them. So help me help you help me learn all the craziness in this world. And Brandon, thanks a lot for having me on. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation and be happy to do it again.
Of course, man. You're always welcome back. So Mr. Sue, Phil, thank you so much. It was a great show. Everything that he listed out there too is going to be in the show notes. And then be sure to subscribe to my newsletter, greencandleinvestments.substack.com, because Phil is going to be putting out some fire newsletters on that. So be on the lookout for kind of some of the topics that we talked about today. And yeah, Phil, thanks so much.
Thanks, man. Peace.